So spring football is done, but the spring football portal is not. It's open for business, although we haven't heard a whole lot. There's not been a ton of activity regarding JMU quite yet when it comes to that. But we'll dive into that here soon. You're listening to the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. I'm Shane Metlin here with Katie Harper in the DNR newsroom. We'll start with, now that football, as far as on the field, is done, we'll start with the actual spring sports here. Dive into a little bit of JMU baseball, softball especially. Let's start with baseball. You were over at VMP last night in a little bit of a missed opportunity for the Dukes, as they had a chance to get another kind of quality type win out of conference midweek, hosting Maryland. Didn't quite get the job done there. It's kind of taken me through that game and what were the vibes afterward, being a midweek game, but I think they probably had to look at this one as like an opportunity that was in front of them.
Yeah, so they definitely let this one go, I think. At the same time, I would say it's kind of been the yesterday's loss was like the flip of what it has been all year, where usually the JMU bats are pretty consistent throughout all nine innings, and it's the pitching that goes up and down. And this isn't to say that the pitching was great yesterday. There were some pitchers that pitched well, but there were some that struggled. And in the end, Maryland scored 6 runs. Only 4 were earned, and they were all off of off of home runs. And so the pitching itself was stable at times, and I think that's what Marlon Eikenberry has wanted to see out of these midweek games, because after the start of the year where you had a guy like Donovan Burke who was pitching in the midweek and going long into the games, now it's kind of switched to where Marlon Eikenberry wants to use 5-6 guys in the midweek just to get his arms used to pitching and just to get them ready for conference play in the conference tournament. But last night there was some disappointment on the offensive side, where they were like, by the fifth inning, they were like, we got out of it. We were swinging at balls. We were swinging at things that we just should be taking. And there was some frustration for sure after that game about what they gave up. Even in the ninth inning, they bring the tying run to the plate and they ground into a double play. So it's one of those things where there was some frustration throughout. But I also would say at the same time, they were almost like, okay, we know what we did wrong, though, and we just need to fix it heading into this weekend against South Alabama.
Yeah, to kind of reset where JMU stands in the season at this point, they were coming off a pretty impressive and a big sweep of Georgia Southern as far as the Sun Belt race goes. That was pretty huge. Right now, JMU 24-16 overall, 10-8 in the Sun Belt. They jumped Georgia Southern and some other teams with that sweep. Sit in a tie for fifth, but just a game back of second in the Sun Belt right now. We'll get into this both baseball and softball here. It's gonna be tough for anybody to catch Louisiana at the top, but there's real opportunity for JMU to move up the standings here in the final few weeks of the season, especially when you look at who JMU has left on the schedule compared to, like, say, a Troy. That's a game ahead of them. A Southern Miss is a game ahead of them. Troy has got, you know, some big series coming up. I think they still have Louisiana to play. They've got Coastal Carolina, the team that's ranked in the top 25. And the one team above JMU in RPI in the Sun Belt right now, to kind of get back to where JMU stands overall, RPI right now dropped 4 spots with a loss yesterday, still 27th in the country RPI wise. That's the second best in the Sun Belt. They've got, you know, the kind of marquee win over number 2 Arkansas earlier this season. They've got a win over Virginia Tech with an opportunity to pick up another one when they go down to Blacksburg here later in the season. Virginia Tech's 41 in RPI. Maryland with the loss yesterday. They're now 0-2 against Maryland, 43, up a few spots after beating, getting a good road win against JMU. So that talk of if this could be an NCAA tournament team, I think is still there. Last night would have helped that in a lot of ways, but I think that talk is still there, especially if JMU can win some series in Sun Belt play down the stretch and kind of continue the momentum they had against Georgia Southern.
The last two series sweeps for JMU have been absolutely huge. I know the Old Dominion one was in between the App State and the Georgia Southern one this weekend, but those are massive. But at the same time, JMU now needs to really start getting some series wins on the road. They have been, it is a tale of two teams when they're at home and when they're on the road. And Eikenberry has said, he's like, you know, it's hard to win in our league and it's hard to win on the road. But at the same time, at some point you need to start getting those road wins. And right now JMU has a schedule ahead in conference play that they need to be capitalizing on. They still have to play Marshall. They still have to play Arkansas State. And they play South Alabama. And these are all teams right now that are near the bottom of the Sun Belt standings. So they need to capitalize on these, especially this weekend on the road at South Alabama.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge, huge series down there in South Alabama. Because South Alabama, they are below. They have a losing record in Sun Belt play. They're probably better than those other teams you mentioned, Arkansas State and Marshall. Six games coming up after the trip to South Alabama, six games at home against Arkansas State and Marshall. If you don't rack up a lot of wins in those two weekends, you're going to be in trouble if you're JMU. I mean, you got to be thinking about, sweeps, definitely not dropping more in a game or two across those two weekends. And then it all kind of builds up to the last week of the regular season for JMU. They get that trip down to Virginia Tech, which is an opportunity for a quality resume type of win. And then they finish it up at Troy, which is going to be huge when you look at where the standings are right now. Troy, one of those teams a game ahead of JMU. And like I mentioned before, Troy's schedule down the stretch is not as favorable as JMU's. There's a real opportunity for JMU to finish among the top few teams in the conference and also get some of those wins that might help them be in the at-large conversation.
And it will definitely be massive for this team, because I think we all need to remember this was a team at the beginning of the season that was projected to finish 10th in the Sun Belt. And right now, I would say if JMU slipped to number 10 in the conference, it would be extremely disappointing with how they've played. And I think one thing that fans should keep an eye on is that Virginia Tech game, because more than likely, with how the last half of the season has gone, it will be a bullpen game. They will be throwing several guys out there on the mound, and it will be a good test that late in the season to see what you have in your bullpen before you go into conference play. And I think last night was kind of a view into that, and someone who will likely hold a midweek role that will be crucial is someone like Todd Mazzocchi. He started the season as a weekend starter, and he's dropped down to being either a bullpen guy on the weekend or seeing, and he started last night in the midweek, and I think he looked really, really good last night, and he's had some ups and downs this season. But if you have him pitching well at this part of the season, that's definitely going to help their bullpen and get this team maybe to another level.
Yeah, I think that would be a huge one to pick up, you know, in the middle of all these conference series. And then, as I mentioned before, you look at Troy's schedule down the stretch. They've got to play at Coastal. They've got Louisiana at home, at Texas State, and then hosting JMU. Like, that's the remainder of their conference schedule. There's a real path there for JMU to make a move up the standings, get a little bit more favorable seed in the conference tournament, which will also, you know, be a factor as far as you know, trying to make the NCAAs. It gives you a chance for some good wins. And not to say that JMU can't even win the conference tournament. I think, you know, they're not going to be the favorite going in, but in a college baseball tournament setting, like, yeah, I mean, it really comes down to if you get some pitching and your bullpen is clicking at the right time and the matchups go, and, you know, those double elimination tournaments can get kind of crazy. JMU has a chance to kind of set themselves up favorably as far as that goes on the baseball diamond, you know, across the complex from them. JMU softball is in a little bit of a similar situation. I don't think they're in a at-large conversation, really, at least not right now. Their RPI, last I checked, was, you know, in the, I think, the 50 range. But they have taken care of business. They've kind of set the model for what JMU baseball has to do as far as, like, beating up on those lower-ranked teams in the Sun Belt. Softball teams taking care of business with, you know, a series of sweeps in conference play, beating up on, you know, the likes of App State and Marshall and the teams that they really should be beating up on. And they've also surged up the standings to some degree. They were in sixth with a losing record just a couple weeks ago, now tied for fourth, only a game back of third place South Alabama, and only two games back of Texas State. Although Texas State, I believe, will have a tiebreaker. They won a series against JMU, but you might also see, wouldn't be shocking to see a lot of, you know, two and three, maybe even four-way ties at different points in the standings for softball. So it's been a good run for JMU softball to kind of get back into the upper tier of the Sun Belt, which I think is what everyone kind of expects of this program overall, not just this season, but just in general, that you kind of expect them to be a top-tier team in this league.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this weekend will be another one that's a good chance for softball to go down and get a sweep on the road. What could benefit this team too, with standings-wise, is that their last series of the regular season is against Coastal, which is right behind them in the state and in the standings, and they get them in Harrisonburg. It's their final home series of the season, of the regular season, and to have that when there is going to be so much close competition in the standings, it seems like, for the Sun Belt, to have Coastal at home is, I think, kind of the key for this team, because like baseball, softball has been almost a different team when they're playing in Harrisonburg.
Yeah, but they did get that, you know, road sweep, really hit the ball well at App State. App State's not a very good team, but, you know, it really, I feel like early on in Sun Belt play, a lot of people were just looking at the raw standings. And this is not just JMU fans, it's people around the Sun Belt looking at the raw standings and were saying, oh, well, JMU's, you know, they got a losing record and they're, you know, middle of the pack and everything. They didn't look at the schedule, because at that point, JMU had played six games. More than half of their conference games were against Louisiana and Texas State. They're both top 25 teams right now, you know, solidly in the top 25. JMU was able to take one from Texas State, swept by Louisiana, which most teams in the Sun Belt end up being swept by Louisiana. Now you look at, you know, where teams are. We'll go back, you know, similar to baseball. Let's talk about Troy. That's who JMU's tied with again. You look at their remaining schedule. They've got a trip to Lafayette to play at Louisiana, three games, last week of the season. That's, you know, if Troy could win that series, that would be a shock, just based on, you know, what Louisiana has done all year. You can count on Louisiana picking up a couple of losses at least here in the coming weeks. So the momentum that JMU has right now and the way the schedule plays out really has been huge. For one, the east side of the Sun Belt is just not as good in softball, and JMU plays the entire east. And like I said, you know, they played their toughest games early, and now they're kind of gaining a lot of momentum at the right time.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about it pretty much every week with how young they are. It's having those games early, it gets them kind of quote-unquote battle-tested early on before you – and so you'd almost expect them to be sweeping teams later in the season when they're playing lower-level competition, because at this point they've probably been trying to play as well as they possibly could because they've been facing those top teams early on.
And beyond that, too, they've also started to figure out what they want to do with their pitching staff. That was a question mark going into the season. I think they liked the arms that they had, but Lauren Laporte, you know, didn't know exactly how she was going to use them. If it was going to be, you know, I'll use three different starters throughout the weekend, or, you know, as she's done now, like, you know, especially on Sundays at the end of a series, she's going to that, you know, two innings from you, two innings from you, and you know, often letting Alyssa Humphrey close it out, and that has seemed to kind of reinvigorate things a little bit for this team. especially like I said, in those third games of the series where they're keeping teams off balance. The offense has been great. And, you know, they're really kind of clicking, especially at the plate. You look at the home run numbers are racking up for a lot of people. KK Mathis, Reed Butler are hitting a lot out of the park. And somebody I wrote about here just the other day, Peyton List, is really hitting the ball right now. She's playing great in left field when she's not pitching, and she's also pitching. Like she's doing a little bit of everything. And you know, they haven't had. She's just a freshman, and I think is getting more and more comfortable in that role. She's taken some lumps pitching at times. Her ERA is not great, but then there's other times where she just overpowers people. So, you know, she's getting better and better. The lineup is deep, and they're figuring out the pitching. They have a chance to make a little bit of noise. I don't know that anybody's going to beat Louisiana in a conference tournament setting, but they have a chance to make some noise and, you know, end this season on a high note and kind of build back towards what JMU softball had been.
Yeah, I'm actually a really big fan of the two innings per pitcher. I think that just really, really goes a long way in keeping teams that you're facing off balance. They don't really settle in to what to expect from the arms on your roster. So I think it's definitely one that's kind of become a benefit to JMU, and it's definitely a new look to the team and to the program compared to what it's been in recent years. But that one's been fun to watch, and I think it will definitely kind of maybe be a key to this team being successful next year and the year after.
Yeah, and you know, I think I've mentioned it before too. I think that's something that they saw in their first year in the Sun Belt going against that they didn't like to go against, and it was something that, you know, Laporte decided she was going to kind of implement, especially now that they went from having one pitcher available at the end of last season now to they've really got five that they could use in various situations and three that are getting the vast majority of the work. So, yeah, softball, like baseball, gaining some momentum at the right time. You know, depending on how things work out, you know, I'm not going to say they're 100% out of a at-large at-large conversation, but they're definitely further out than the baseball team right now, which, you know, it sounds almost crazy coming off my tongue as we talk about it, but you know, decent things happening for both the bat and ball sports over at Veterans Memorial Park. Switching gears over to football a little bit, we discussed the spring game in depth on Saturday. If you haven't, check out that episode. Wherever you're listening to this, just go back and click on Saturday's spring game edition if you want to hear the real in-depth conversation of what we had then. Since then, though, a little bit of portal activity for JMU. That's to be expected. It's going to happen at this point when it opens up post-spring game. But for the most part, I think JMU fans, I mean, anything can happen here in the coming days. But as we record this on Wednesday afternoon, three people in the portal post-spring. And maybe a little bit of a sigh of relief right now, I think, if you're JMU fans, as far as like what's happened and what hasn't happened in the transfer portal so far.
Yeah, I was, when Tyreek Tucker entered before the spring game had even been played, that was a little bit surprising. He had talked with the media in the spring practices. He seemed happy. He seemed like he was playing well. So that one kind of came as a surprise. And then I think after what we saw in December, which, mind you, there was a coaching change, which is going to spur more people jumping in. After the spring game, I was kind of expecting maybe a little bit more action than what we've seen. Because you have to remember now, it's a shorter window in the spring than it is at the end of the fall into the winter. You have 2 weeks pretty much to enter your name in. Obviously, you can... That's just to enter your name in, and then you don't have to be committed anywhere after those 2 weeks. But to only be down right now three players is interesting, and I think it's maybe speaks a lot to what Chesney has brought in, what his staff has brought in, what they've set the expectation as. And I think it's something that shows that a lot of these players are happy right now with where they're at, what they think they can do. I think it's also really interesting when you remember the expanded college football playoff. Maybe they are sitting there looking around and be like, you know what, this could be very likely a top group of five team. We could get that spot into the playoffs. So I think right now it seems that there's a lot of happy players, and to only lose one defensive lineman and then two running backs, who it's wild that, you know, after the season last year, the running backs room was pretty much depleted, and now you have two guys going in because they're looking at the roster ahead of them and thinking, you know what, we probably don't have a clear path to a lot of playing time.
Yeah, let's talk about the three names specifically, and then cross our fingers that that doesn't change before we post this. You know, Tyree Tucker, as you mentioned, defensive lineman, was one who went in before the spring game, and I think somewhat surprising, he's the one guy on this list that played a pretty central role last year. By the end of the season, with Jalen Green out, he was a key guy on the defensive line. He probably had an opportunity to do that again this year, but you know, may or may not have other opportunities as far as, you know, NIL and things out there for him. I don't know if that spurred the decision to enter the portal, but you can certainly speculate that that could have had something to do with it. Then, as you mentioned, two running backs, Sammy Malignaggi, who has been in a reserve role his entire time at JMU, outside of, you know, getting some playing time in special teams and in the kickoff return game, things like that. He enters the portal looking like he wasn't going to get a whole lot of carries this coming season. And then Solomon Van Horst, I think, is the one that's going to be a little bit bittersweet to some people, because, you know, he worked his way back from injury again. He's a guy everybody around the program and fans of the program, everybody, I mean, extremely, extremely likable person, who you kind of wanted to see get that last opportunity. But you also kind of got to just wonder for him if it's going to be a matter of getting as many carries as he might like in his last real opportunity to play football. He's probably going to want to carry the ball, be a featured back somewhere, and he might have that opportunity somewhere just with his skill set.
Out of the two, I would say Van Horst definitely has the opportunity to find a school, especially at the Division I level, that would be looking for someone with his skill set to be featured more often. I think he's a really, really capable running back. He has shown it when he's healthy. He can play out of the backfield. He can catch passes. He can return kicks. So he's definitely very versatile, and I think he's definitely the one that could find a landing spot that's going to give him that last little bit of playing time, because he's an older guy. I was talking about it yesterday. He's the last JMU football player on this roster that I covered in college and then was still covering now, and it's been 4 years since I graduated college. So he's been around for a while, and I think he is coming to terms now with, okay, my college career is, it's about to end. There's no next year. There's no this or that. And I think a lot of JMU fans, from what I was seeing on social media, are very understanding of that. And they understand that he's not leaving because he doesn't like the program or something like that. He's leaving because this is his last shot to play some football, probably.
Yeah. And we'll get into the guys who are probably going to get those carries in a minute, but just, you know, going back to him, I think, like you said, he's the one guy, of those two in the running back room, that I think has the opportunity maybe to catch on and really play somewhere, even at the group of five level. I think you look at Sammy, I think he could be a really good running back at the FCS level, might be where he ends up. If I'm just kind of looking at what he might be able to do. And Tyreek Tucker, I think, very interested to see like what he ends up with. If this is a guy looking for, he's still a young guy with a lot of years of eligibility, and his brother played at the, you know, power five level for his last year after transferring from JMU. So maybe he's looking for that opportunity as well. I think he's definitely somebody who could be a really good group of five player down the line. So we'll see what ends up happening with him.
Yeah, going off Tyreek Tucker's decision, again, he's young, so he very much could grow into a very, very strong player. I think the jump into the portal now was interesting in the sense of he has only shared on social media two of his offers. He has an offer from Liberty and an offer from Temple, which both have, I mean, Liberty, we all saw them last year. They were playing on a New Year's Six Bowl. those are very interesting offers, and I'm not sure if maybe he was expecting some more Power Five looks, because in my mind, watching him, he's still young, and you know, when his brother made the jump to a Power Five school, he was at the tail end of his college career where he had proven himself for multiple years. And I think Tyreek, he's still young, so I think the ceiling is still very high for him. But there is part of me that wonders, maybe if he stuck around for one more year, there would have been a better, bigger school looking at him in the portal this time next year.
Yeah, it is interesting, because when you look at Diamante, like you said, was very proven. And those offers, well, I mean, within hours, he was posting offers from, you know, big time programs. He winds up at Texas. I think from what I heard, you know, there were coaches from Texas in Harrisonburg almost immediately, like with the access to the private jets and everything they had, like they came to see him almost immediately when he hit the portal. It doesn't seem like there's anybody from JMU in the portal right now, like getting that kind of pursuit. Some of that has to do with, you know, a lot of those guys that might have done that,
they already left
in December. And now a lot of the guys who you're looking at are going to be playing at JMU had already made that conscious decision a few months ago that JMU was where they wanted to be. And, you know, I think a lot of the guys who came in look like they're going to play.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know there are some people, we had talked about it at some point. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast or not, where there are young players on this roster who I think in the future could go and find some big NIL money. And I know like one of them people are going to hate to hear brought up is D'Angelo Pons because of how young he is and how good he is. But he's one of those guys too who he told the media a few weeks ago during spring practice that there was a moment right after the season ended and Cignetti left that he was thinking, maybe I will enter the portal. Maybe I will try and find somewhere else to go. And he's like, I then met Bob Chesney, and he was like, and he brought Coach Whitley into the cornerbacks room. And he's like, that's what kept me at JMU. So a lot of these coaching hires have done a good job of keeping JMU players who are young and look like they have a bright future in Harrisonburg, at least for a little bit longer, because they believe in the coaches that are around them.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was saying too, a lot of the guys who made that decision either to stay or to come in are guys who look like they're going to play big roles. You know, Dylan Morris obviously came here to start at quarterback, and he's more than likely going to start at quarterback. You know, we talk about the guys who left in the running back room. You know, a George Pettaway is a guy who potentially could get some offers somewhere else, but he looks like he's going to be the guy in the running back room. Or, you know, just, you know, almost everybody who came in that people were excited about, I don't think that's dampened at all. It's not a situation where, like, you know, even a few years ago or just a couple years ago, they get A.J. Davis out of the portal from Pitt, and everybody's really excited about that. And he comes and he sees pretty clearly, like, he's not going to play very much, even though he was a big name and a big-time recruit and everything, and he's gone. And that doesn't seem to be a situation for hardly anybody right now.
No, I think there's a lot of excitement around this team, and I think there's for good reason. And with the running back room especially, I know there were a lot of fans disappointed at the end of the last season with who left and who came back and things like that. This running back room right now, I think it's a good step up from what it was a year ago. And so I think there are just a lot of good players who have bought in right now and seem to be ready to play next season and in the fall.
Yeah. Other team that's also bringing in a lot of talent right now, we'll talk about a little bit of basketball before we sign off. Although hardly even going to get into it because that's just been changing so rapidly. But we could talk about, you know, the two big men the Dukes brought in. They're going to have some size that JMU fans haven't seen in a long time, with a couple of 6'11 high major transfers coming in. Ebenezer Dwana from Georgia Tech started his career at NC State. He's transferring, and he was the first one. And then Elijah Hutchins Everett from Seton Hall, somebody that Preston Spradlin is really familiar with, having coached against him when he was at Austin Peay. And he was a pretty big scorer. He was a freshman of the year in the Ohio Valley Conference. averaged about 13 points a game as a freshman there at Austin Peay. He's coming in a pair of 6'11 centers to go along with a really reloaded backcourt. Still some holes to fill, still some spots to fill. I think those are going to keep coming in. But right now, there's not going to be, I think, a huge drop off in talent for the basketball program after what was, you know, a historic season.
Yeah, I just have to say, 6'11", just to have one person that's 6'11", is mind-boggling to me. That's just very, very tall. And to have two of them, when I saw that second one come in, I'm like, this is insane. I can't even almost compute what 6'11 looks like. And so this is definitely, Preston Spradlin has come in, and he is, again, like Chesney did in December for football, he has hit the ground running. And I know there were moments of panic when everybody's looking at the scholarship picture and pretty much every scholarship player on the JMU men's basketball team was gone. And now you get Xavier Brown back, and it's looking like a really good team, and it's looking like a team that should be possibly feared in the Sun Belt play again next year.
Yeah, you mentioned like the football comparison and stuff, and it's a situation where in both cases, the previous staff, the previous whatever administration, everything that's happened has left it in a better place, whether it's now you're recruiting to FBS for JMU football and the facilities that are there, and you're still winning in the Sun Belt. And for basketball, Mark Byington just left the program in a much easier place to recruit these guys. They talk about coming into a winning culture, which is, you know, part JMU and is part what Spradlin's brought from Morehead State. But, you're able to hire a coach at that level because of what's happened at JMU over the past few years, not just in basketball, but in everything. And, you really see the investment across the board in JMU athletics. You're seeing why and how it pays off now, just when you've got the ability to recruit like you are in these high profile sports.
Yeah, and this is kind of a teaser for what's to come in the next week or so. I had a nice sit-down interview yesterday with Jeff Bourne in his final weeks with the program, and I did ask him about hiring coaches in his final year. I know he had joked at times that he really wasn't looking forward to hiring one coach, let alone two, right before retirement, but I asked him if there was, in a sense, an added pressure when you're hiring coaches for these programs that historically have are coming off really historic seasons. Is there pressure in that when you're doing it in your final year? And he said, yeah, there is a pressure there, because in his mind, he wanted to make sure he was hiring someone that could carry on that legacy of what JMU athletics is and what it will be in the next few years. And so I think Jeff Bourne has found two coaches who have already, before even playing or leading their teams into true games where they're facing a opponent other than themselves, he has shown that those two coaches are very capable at doing it.
Yeah. Future looks bright, kind of across the board. Definitely interesting to see, I'm sure we'll have more basketball recruits to talk about here in the next episode when we come back in a week, men's and women's. Probably some football recruits too, I think, will probably start possibly happening. Yeah.
Football transfer portal should be closed by this time next week too, I believe.
Yeah. Also seeing, plenty of offers and visits from high school players, so that'll heat up. Gonna be plenty to talk about even as we inch towards the summer, but in the meantime, have to thank you for listening once again to the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. I'm Shane Metlin, here again with Katie Harper, and thanks for tuning in.